he won't, she says crisply, glancing over her shoulder from the row in front of us with a toss of her hair. That color makes you look ill. You should tell your maid to avoid it in the future. I think she looks beautiful, I say with a glare. Blue's eyes flick to me, her chin tilted. Looks like Master Takoa was right about all that fire nine. You're practically a human lantern. The corners of her mouth tug up. Such a shame how some girls have to be so obvious to attract the king's attention. At least little Aoki doesn't need to try so hard. You know, the king tells me her company is surprisingly pleasant. To my surprise, Aoki beams at this. When Blue turns back round, she grabs my knee, leaning in. Did you hear that? The king enjoys his time with me. I grimace. And that's a good thing? Something darts across her face. Hurt. I told you at the party, Lei, she says, shifting back. He's kind to me. Only because he's getting what he wants. After my night with Ren, the softness, the fierceness, the tenderness of the hunger I felt in her lips, so different from how I felt under the king's touch, I can't imagine how Aoki could actually enjoy her time with him. And for the king to call her company pleasant? Pleasant. A word dull with mediocrity. Nothing like the dazzle and burn I felt at Ren's kiss, the way I hope for every girl to be thought of by her lover. I open my mouth to say more, but just then, the lanterns in the hall blow out. A hush falls over the crowd. I thought you'd be happy for me, Aoki whispers. Her face is shadowed in the now dark hall, but I don't need light to know her expression. Even in the darkness, her eyes glimmer with tears. My face twists. Aoki, I start. But she turns to face the stage, inching away. Ren presses her shoulder gently to mine. We, of all people, can't judge Aoki for what she feels, she says under her breath, chin tilted down. Or for whom? I go to retort, but the heavy beat of drums echoes through the room, silencing me. A lithe, gazelle-form woman dances onto the stage. Unlike the typical shadow play performances I've seen, where the actors hold up puppets, this actress is the puppet. Her body is wrapped in a wooden cage mimicking her own form, but making it twice as tall. A jewel-eyed gazelle mask perches at the top of the elongated wooden neck, arching from the dancer's back. As she moves behind the rippling sheets of silk, her exaggerated horn shadow arcs and turns. With every movement, murmurs rise among the crowd. I shoot Ren a sideways look. Where's the king? He should have been announced. A shout cuts me off. At first, I think it's part of the play, that the noise is coming from the stage. But then there's another shout, and another. In a handful of seconds, the whole theater erupts with cries, and I realize this isn't a performance. Something's wrong. Panic floods the hall, a physical thing, buzzing and spilling over the edges with the rage of a monsoon tide. All around us, the crowd is scrambling to their feet. Demons and humans, court members and their companions, stumbling over cushions and even one another in their rush to escape. An object whirs over my head toward the stage. I catch a glimpse of it. A blazing arrow, before it strikes one of the hanging silks. The fabric bursts into flames, a waterfall of orange cascading to the floor. More fire leaps into life where the screen fell. A second volley of arrows whistles over our heads, so close it stirs the air. On stage, the gazelle dancer runs through the blaze, her puppet silhouette elongated and ghostly, a horrible mimicry of the performance she was meant to be giving. Ren seizes my hand. We have to get out, she says, dragging me to my feet. I barely hear her over the screams, the crackling burr of the flames. It's shocking how quickly the fire has spread. The hall is lit in flickering gold. I stumble to keep up. What's going on? It's an attack. They must be after the king. The step seats around us are deserted. Everyone has rushed to the exit at the back of the hall, causing a crush. Through the smoke, I spot Mistress Iara helping Jen and Jin, one of whom is limping. Ahead, Madame Himura marshals the rest of the girls. There's a gleam of dark lapis hair. As Madame Himura pushes her forward, Blue looks around. Tears stream down her cheeks, her face white. Aoki's fingers snap round my arm. Lei, she gasps. Her eyes are wide, the reflection of flames dancing within them. Don't worry, I say, gripping her hand. I'm here. I pull her along with me, following Ren to the end of the row. Just as we get there, there's a thundering crack. Dislodged from the roof, a burning beam of wood crashes down, landing right across our path. Flames lash out from it like fiery whips. I stagger back, instinctively pushing Aoki behind me. We're not going to get out, she sobs, squeezing my fingers tighter. Ren whirls around. Without any explanation, she strides off again, picking her way easily down the cushion-strewn steps in the direction of the stage. That's the wrong way, I yell, but she doesn't change course. Aoki and I take off after her into the smoke and fire-lit shadows. The roar of burning swells louder as we near the heart of the fire. And from under it, a new sound rises. The teeth-ringing clash of metal upon metal. My stomach leaps. Sword fighting. I'm just about to point this out to Ren when she comes to an abrupt stop. It should be here, she says so low I almost don't catch it. She drops to her knees, palming the floor. What should? I shout back. She doesn't answer. After a few more seconds, she lets out a little hiss of triumph and jumps back up. At first, I can't see anything through the smoke, but she draws me into position at the edge of an opening in the floor. A trap door. It's a short drop, she says. Move away when you're down. I stare at her, blinking back the sweat stinging my eyes. How did you know this was here? I ask, but she turns to help Aoki, ignoring my question. When she looks around to see if I've gone, she lets out an exasperated growl. Just go! Jaw clenched, I move forward and drop into darkness. The fall is short, as Ren promised. I land awkwardly. Pain shoots through my ankle, but I grit my teeth and roll out of the way as Aoki follows with a shout. I'm helping her to her feet when Ren lands, impossibly light, as graceful as a cat. She strides down the tunnel, not even looking in the other direction. This way, she orders. We hurry after her. Seconds later, there's a fourth thud behind us. The growl of a male voice. Stop. In one quick movement, Ren shoves us back. It's dark here under the theater, the air still clogged with smoke, but some light sparks down from the flames above, casting eerie flickers through the gloom. It illuminates the intense calmness on Ren's face as she strides past us toward the shadowy figure. Despite the heat, horrible shivers run across my skin as I see that her irises have turned white, pure, startlingly white. The whole of the eye solid like ice. Fire reflects off them, sliding yellow flames on white. Leave us, she tells the figure. The king isn't here. And I flinch, because her voice is different too. It has a deep echo to it, as though many wrens were speaking through her, and in the space where her words hang in the air, there's a current of coldness. The only answer is the screech of steel as the man draws his blade from its scabbard. With a cry, he moves forward. Ren ducks as a sword slices through the air. The man raises it again, thrusting toward her. She dances out of his way, rolls to field a third blow. She dips, skating away from another parry. Then, with a whirl of her silk robes, she jumps. Her left leg flies up and catches the man on the shoulder. He staggers, recovers, loosening yet another battle cry. He lunges at her with a curving cut of his blade. Ren is too quick for him. Too quick for anyone. The way she moves is unnatural, her hair and robes flowing around her as if sifting through water, her movements fluid and precise. She leaps easily aside. While he's still propelled forward from the momentum of his strike, she moves behind him and hooks an arm around his neck. He lets out a startled cry as she knocks the sword from his hand and catches the blade, turning it toward him, and sinks it into his chest. It happens so quickly, so smoothly, that the man doesn't seem to comprehend at first what has occurred. His mouth is stuck in a surprised, almost comical O. Then he lets out a deep, awful groan. His face slackens. One hand grasps weakly at the sword, but his fingers slide on the handle, coming away slick with blood, and he rocks forward, limbs limp. Ren lowers him to the floor. Her hands make the sky god's salute over his slumped body. Before she looks up at me, still with that eerie white stare. In an instant, her eyes return to their normal black-brown. The focused expression drops from her face. She gets to her feet. Lei, she starts coming toward me with her hands held out. If it's meant as a calming gesture, it has the opposite effect. Her palms are dark with blood, and I jerk away from them, a ragged shudder rippling down my spine. You're Shaw, I say in a hollow voice that doesn't sound like my own. She wipes her hands on her dress. I already told you. No, I mean, you're Shaw. Because I'm not talking about what she's already told me about being born to the warrior clan. She's not just Shaw by heritage. She's a warrior. Not just by blood, but in practice. We stare at each other through the shifting smoke. It stings my eyes and I double over coughing. The smoke is growing thicker, pooling the tunnel in dark, swirling coils. We have to get out of here, Ren says, turning. Where's Aoki? I spin around. It takes me a few seconds to make out her slumped form on the floor. At once I hurry to her side, pressing two fingertips under the curve of her jawbone. Is she all right? Ren asks. A pulse flutters against my touch, weak but steady. I think so. She must have fainted. Reaching past me, Ren threads an arm under Aoki's back and slings her over one shoulder in an easy movement. Let's go. Though Aoki is small, she isn't so light that Ren should be able to lift her this way. I follow her in silence, scared to get too close to this girl with the blood-stained hands. The tunnel isn't long. At its end, we open the trap door overhead. Rain greets our upturned faces. Ren helps me out first. I cringe at the smell of blood on her, and then together we lift out Aoki. With another easy movement, Ren picks Aoki back up, and we hurry around the side of the building, keeping a safe distance from the flames. A crowd has gathered. As we join them, my eyes alert for the other girls, a number of carriages pull up to the front of the theater. I recognize the black handprint symbol on the sides of their carriages as the same as those on the robes of the shamans who purified me before seeing the king, and the one who fixed my bruises after. The royal shamans. Ren sets Aoki down. I kneel beside her to check she's breathing, shielding her face from the rain with my arm before turning my attention back to the carriages. Black-robed figures are filing out of them, orderly and calm. Even though their skin is hidden, I can picture the dark web of tattoos on their bodies, their skin a forest of ink, like some kind of dark map of sacrifice and pain. The shamans form a ring around the theater. In perfect synchrony, they raise their hands and begin to draw glowing characters in the air in front of them, chanting as they write. The warm prickle of magic radiates from them, a growing thrum. When the air is so full of pressure, it's like being in the midst of a thunderstorm. The shamans whip their hands upward. A gust of wind bursts from their circle. It blasts in both directions, billowing into us, making our eyes water and clothes fly out, and rushing toward the theater, swelling and rising to tower over the domed building, solidifying into a roiling pewter cloud. It hangs there, dark and growling. Then it drops from the air, transforming as it falls into a plunging torrent of water. Water gushes over the theater, swallowing the flames. Hitting the ground, we're soaked through in an instant as the wave barrels into us. Aoki comes round with a gasp. I help her up, shoving the wet hair from her face. I'm gasping myself, numb from the chill night air on my wet skin, and we clutch each other, both shaking.
What happened?
She cries, looking left and right.
Did you see them, Lei? I think someone followed us into the tunnel.
She cuts off, coughing. I rub her back. It was just something falling. A piece of wood. Don't worry.
But...
You fainted, Aoki. Take it easy. I'm going to get you something warm to wear. Can you wait here? Still trembling, she nods. As I get to my feet, Ren puts a hand on my shoulder. Lei, look after her. I won't be long. I take a sharp inhale, continuing in a low voice. You knew the trapdoor was there, Ren. You knew how to fight. How to kill. The crowd is moving around us, and someone bumps into me, knocking me into Ren. She lifts her arms to steady me, but I jerk back, the image of her in the tunnel re-entering my mind. I thought I knew you, I say weakly. She flinches. You do know me. I'm going to get some robes or a blanket for Aoki. I go on avoiding her eyes. We can talk when you're ready to tell me the truth about what the gods just happened. Ren catches me as I turn. I haven't lied to you, Lei, she promises. Well, you haven't exactly told me the truth either. Her mouth parts, something pained, pinching her face, and I force myself to walk away. 25. We spend a sleepless night back at Paper House, waiting in one of the parlors as a group of doctors and shamans check us over one by one. The hours slip by in shocked silence, all of us dazed. Madame Himura calls us to her suite early the next morning. We haven't even had a chance to bathe or eat breakfast, and her hair and clothes still reek of smoke. The royal messenger just left, she tells us once we've all sat down. Our guesses were right. The attack was an assassination attempt. Ren shifts forward, her back rod straight. Who by? She asks. All we know is that there were a group of 10 paper cast men. 3 were taken alive. The other 7 were killed at the theater by guards. An image comes to me of Ren's white eyes as she turned the man's sword on himself. Not just guards. I sense her looking my way and stare ahead, my jaw set. But the king wasn't even at the theater, Chenna points out. Madam Himura clacks her beak.
Thank the heavenly rulers. A messenger came to stop him just as he arrived. One of the royal fortune tellers had a premonition of the attack. That's how they got the shamans to the theater so quickly.
Blue shifts forward, her fingers fidgeting with the hem of her skirt.
Was anyone hurt?
She asks, and though her voice is steady, there's an undercurrent of something nervous in it. The gray morning light picks out her cheekbones, carving dark hollows beneath them.
From the audience, I mean.
2 court officials were killed, 12 more injured.
Because my father was there, Blue goes on, and I haven't heard from him.
Madam Himura holds up a hand to silence her. She looks around at us, down the hook of her curved beak nose, her yellow eyes unblinking.
The king has taken the assassins for questioning. For now, he has ordered your usual schedule to be on hold. You're to stay in Paper House until further notice.
As the rest of us go to leave, Blue makes a beeline for Madam Himura.
My father,
she starts again, but the eagle woman waves her away.
Not now, girl.
But
how many times do I have to tell you?
Madam Himura squawks.
Just because your father is a member of the court does not mean it affords you any special privileges. Open your mouth once more today, and I will not hesitate to throw you out.
Blue's lips flatten into a bloodless line. Glowering, she strides past us, Mariko hurrying after her. Aoki and I are the last to leave. We walk slowly down the corridor.
2 people dead,
she mutters. She gives me a sideways glance.
Can you believe it? It could have been us, Lei.
Thank the gods Ren found that trap door. I make a non-committal murmur, because I saw the look on her face, and it wasn't surprise. It was surety. The two of us head to the bathing courtyard. I'm eager to get the stink of smoke out of my hair, the traces of darkened blood on my skin from where Ren lifted me out of the tunnel. We're just passing through the corridor where our bedrooms are, when there's the sound of a door opening behind us. Jen's head pokes out of her room.
Oh, she says, looking relieved. We thought it might be Mariko and Blue.
Do you want to join us? I know what they're doing, and talking about last night is the last thing I feel like. Not least because since I confronted her outside the theater, Ren hasn't come to talk to me yet, and I'm starting to wonder whether maybe I was too hard on her. She was just protecting us, after all, like Aoki said. But Aoki nods, and I follow her into Jen's bedroom, not wanting to be alone right now either. Chenna and the twins are inside. They look grim. Jin sitting against the wall, under the window with her legs pulled up to her chin, while Jen kneels on the bamboo mat floor, her dirt-stained blue Hanfu robes ripped at one shoulder. Chenna gives me a humorless smile, shifting slightly to make room for us. As I kneel, I smooth down the rumpled fabric of my cheongsam. My fingers catch on a torn slash. Through it, the skin of my thigh shines palely. Even burnt and dirty, the dress is still almost the same hue as the flames that scorched it, making me think of what Blue said to me before the play began, comes back to me.
Looks like Master Takoa was right about all that fire, Nine. You're practically a human lantern.
Was that what happened last night? Did I somehow unknowingly cause the attack?
You were saying you think the assassins are from Noe?
Jen directs at Chenna once we're settled. The same region as those slaves at the Koyo party? Chenna lifts a shoulder.
It's just a guess. But it seems too much of a coincidence that this happens a week after they were brought here, don't you think?
I'm not sure, Jin replies. She rubs her arms where they're looped round her legs. There are so many paper families and clans with reasons to hate the king.
And the raids have been going on all over Ikara, her sister adds. Our father told us before coming here that the king is blaming them on the rebels. That they're doing it to discredit him with the paper castes.
Beside me, Aoki shifts, fluttering her fingers over her skirt.
I don't think the king would do that.
I'm not sure what the king wouldn't do, Chenna says stonily, and though I agree with her, I don't say so.
Aoki's cheeks color.
He has a lot to deal with, she mutters.
Yes, Chenna retorts. It must be hard for him here in this luxurious palace, with all these beautiful things around him.
You mean like us?
The girls stare at me, an uncomfortable silence descending over the room. I haven't ever told them what I really think of being here, excluding Aoki and Ren, of course, though I suppose my actions have made it explicit enough. I've guessed at Chenna feeling a similar way. She wears her duty well, but grudgingly. But Jen and Jin have always seemed happy to be here.
Don't you feel bad for the things we've seen happen to paper castes here, who aren't protected by the king in the same way we are? I ask into the quiet. Didn't you feel anything for those slaves the other night?
Of course I did, Chenna says, shooting me a stern, almost hurt look.
I remember the disgust in her eyes as we watched the slaves, side by side in a crowd of demons. Her prayer to Kune. She lifts her chin.
But what can we do about it? It's the same outside the palace. Even my father, as well respected as he is in Iyazu, has had to suffer bullying from steels and moons. I've seen the way they look at us, the whispers behind our backs. A lot of the time, they don't even bother to whisper.
The twins nod.
It was like that for us too, Jen says. Sometimes the worst of it even came from other paper castes. Like we were somehow betraying them by being involved in the court.
That's what I mean, I press. Here, we're not experiencing life the way most paper castes do.
Isn't that a good thing?
Aoki's flush deepens as all of us turn to her. I mean, she continues more tentatively, picking at the torn thread of her hem.
We're treated well here. We're looked after.
Oh, like how I was chained to the floor and starved for a week? I cut in.
Well, she says, her cheeks pink. It could have been worse.
Her words hit me with the shock of a slap. The twins stare as Aoki and I glare at each other.
Look, Chenna says, raising her palms, her voice steady. You both make good points. I hear what you're saying, Lei. I'm sure we all do. We're not denying the privilege our status has brought us. But I don't see how we can change anything.
Aoki's right. It could have been a lot worse for you. And what you went through was already so bad. And that was for offending the king in a personal way. This is Ikaran politics we're talking about. This is bigger than us.
That's exactly what I'm trying to say,
I want to shout. But I'm still reeling from Aoki's comment. And underneath their wariness, Chenna and the twins look exhausted. The same fatigue hits me afresh. After what we all just went through, we don't need to be fighting among ourselves as well.
The pleading look on Ren's face last night comes back to me. How she must be feeling even worse, given what she did to protect us. I shift my legs uncomfortably
Now I'm sure I was too harsh on her. Jin clears her throat. So, what do you think will happen to the assassins? I look across at her, grateful for the change of subject. Well, we know they're being questioned. She shakes her head, brow knitted. I mean, after.
Court law for treason of any kind is execution, Chenna states matter-of-factly.
Execution. The word is as sharp as its meaning.
And in the palace, she goes on, executions are public events.
My mouth twists. You mean we'll have to watch? Chenna nods. The twins share an apprehensive look.
Aoki stares fixedly ahead, not meeting anyone's eyes.
Maybe they'll just imprison them,
Jin suggests eventually.
And I suppose, Jen says, they could always, maybe, find them not guilty?
Chenna and I both raise our eyebrows at her.
They would have killed him,
Aoki says, quiet and a little shaky, looking down at her palms.
Are we forgetting that?
When no one replies, she scrambles to her feet, hands clutched into fists.
I'm tired of listening to this, she declares, her face red. The king might be scared, too. Did any of you think about that? And we're not even allowed to see if he's all right. He's worried and hurt and all alone.
Aoki, I start, getting to my feet.
Not now, Lei,
she mumbles thickly. Rubbing her face with the heels of her hands, she puffs out a loud breath before rushing out of the room.
Maybe you should give her some time, Chenna suggests quietly when I move to follow her. She's probably just in shock after what happened. She needs to rest.
Jin's eyes click to me.
I think we all do.
The three of them decide to get some sleep, but when I leave, I pass the door to my bedroom. I continue to the bathing courtyard as originally planned, half hoping to find Aoki or Ren there. Still, when I find it empty, I'm suddenly grateful for a moment to myself. Hidden in the steam, I undress by my usual tub, throwing my dirty clothes to the floor with slightly more force than necessary before climbing into the water. It takes a long time to scrub the dirt from my body. Even after I'm clean, last night's smoke clings to me, an invisible second skin. I stay in long after my fingertips grow wrinkly, unable to shake the unease that's been coursing through me all night. Every time I close my eyes, the image of Ren and the assassin is waiting for me. The surprised look on his face, the calm, focused expression on hers. She's a true Shah, a warrior. A girl trained to kill, in the heart of the kingdom. A girl who can get closer to the king than most. I can think of an explanation as to why, but I'm not sure I want to believe it. Just as I'm about to get out, the sound of approaching steps makes me start. I swirl round, splashing water over the side of the barrel. Through the clouds, I make out a tall figure coming toward me. My belly loops. It's her. I duck lower, crossing my arms over my chest, suddenly, hyper aware of my nakedness. Though Ren's face is composed, there's a tender look in her eyes. She stops a few feet away.
Can we talk?
She asks. And the tentativeness in her voice, the idea that she's even worried I could say no, strikes me with fresh guilt. I nod, but she doesn't come any closer. Even in last night's ruined dress, she is beautiful. Though the jade-green silks of her Hanfu robes are slashed and charred, the color still brings out the glossy tan of her skin, the definition of her long, muscled limbs.
My instinct is to run to her, to hug her, kiss away her pain. But even if I understand why she did it, the memory of her stabbing the man in the tunnel holds me back. That wasn't the girl I kissed 2 nights ago in a dark bedroom. The girl who held me as I cried under the whispering boughs of the paper leaf tree, who made me feel so safe. My eyes dropped to the stain of blood on the collar of her robes. "You killed a man," I state, hollow. "Only to protect you and Aoki. And that makes it right?" "Of course not. But I had to do something, Lei. He would have tried to kill us all." A bead of moisture slips down my temple, and I swipe it away, hurriedly crossing my arms again. "It wasn't us he wanted. They wanted the king, and he wasn't even there." "Is that why you're angry?" Ren asks, an odd tilt to her voice. "Because you wanted them to kill him?" I hesitate. "Maybe," I murmur, my cheek turned. Then I look back, forcing myself to meet her stare. "What do you think?" Ren's expression is unreadable. She stands stiffly, arms rigid at her sides. "Just as Zoka and Alla chase each other across the skies," she recites, "does darkness not follow light, and light follow darkness, neither one truly ahead of the other?" The saying is old, familiar with everyone in Ikara. "I like to think there's some good behind even the darkest sins, that death can be warranted if it paves the way for hope." I edge forward in the tub. "Is that why you are a warrior?" "Because you are, aren't you, Ren? You fight like the Shah." Her neck flexes as she swallows. I sense her wanting to refuse to answer, but finally, she eventually gives a small jerk of her head that I take as a nod. "I've been trained in the Shah form since I was young." A flashback to the glimpse of her feet that morning before the unveiling ceremony, when she held up her robe as she stepped into my room. So that's what turned them rough. "Trained by who?" I press. "My father, partly. And my Shifu, Master Khan." "They can fight like the Shah?" Ren shakes her head. "My father is skilled at Qi work, and Khan is one of Han's finest fighters. But I'm the only one that can bring the two together properly, the way the Shah did. It's in my blood," she finishes softly. I remember her sadness that day at the temple and ghost court, her longing for her lost family. The same sense of loss rings in her voice now. "Why were you even taught?" I go on, more gently now. "I'm guessing daughters of nobility don't usually get trained in martial arts." "Actually," Ren says, "they often are, especially in Onken and Han. Though it's seen as more of a ceremonial skill than one to be used in real battle." "But yours isn't just an aesthetic practice."
"No."
"And it's a style that the original king himself outlawed."
"Yes."
"So why was it allowed?"
"It wasn't. I was trained in secret."
Silence unfurls between us at this. Ren remains still, not breaking eye contact. There's a defiance, a pride to the set of her shoulders, and the way she lifts her spine tall, chin slightly tilted, that brings me back to the aloof girl I first met all those months ago. But despite her posture, that girl is looking at me with such tenderness in her eyes, it makes my heart lurch, and all the intimacies we've shared shine within her warm irises, as luminous and sweet as stars.
Part of me is hurt by how much Ren has hidden from me, and I can tell she's holding back even more. But tightness knits my chest at the thought of losing her. It hits me then how much trust she's putting in me by telling me this. I could ruin her with this information, her entire family. The Hanos are some of the king's most trusted supporters, and here is Lord Hanno's daughter herself, a warrior trained in a forbidden language of fighting, whose ancestor massacred those who practiced it. And I think I know why. I take a breath, readying myself to ask her. But before I can say anything, Ren crosses the distance between us. Without a word, she reaches back and releases the sash round her waist. I splash back, gaping at her. What are you doing? There are some things about myself I can't tell you. She interrupts, quiet and fierce. But that doesn't mean I don't want to give myself to you. I'm always truthful to you in here, Lei. Her fingers hover over her heart. Then, holding the collar of her robes, she draws them off her shoulders and lets them drop to the floor in a cascade of silky fabric. Ren's body is so different from the other girls. Lives of luxury have kept their figures soft, but hers is muscled and strong, beautiful and dangerous. My eyes travel over her long, elegant neck, her wide shoulders, the deep shadow down the center of her chest, a line I long to follow with my tongue. I return my gaze to her shining face. Ren, I begin, but she shakes her head. Slowly, not taking her eyes off mine, she climbs into the tub. As she slides down in front of me, water rolls over the edges and up to my neck in a warm wave that reminds me afresh that Ren isn't the only one who's naked. I shrink back.
We can't do this. Not here. Someone could see.
They're all sleeping. Her voice is husky, low. Wet fingertips lift to my cheek. Don't worry. No one can see through the steam. And we'll hear them coming anyway. She moves closer, her breath hot against my face. Something more than desire shimmers in her eyes. Some tender vulnerability that is betrayed in her voice as she goes on. Last night, I could have lost you. The steam lifting from the water swirls around us, a soft cocoon.
You saved me, Ren,
I whisper.
Aoki, too. You got us out safely. I'm sorry I didn't thank you last night. It's just...
I know.
I was shocked.
I know.
Scared.
Ren scoops her hand behind my head, dipping her forehead to mine. Her lashes flutter.
Me too.
She sighs.
You didn't seem it.
I'm trained not to. I'm trained to be strong, to not let anybody see my weaknesses, my fear. But I'm scared too, Lei. I lean back to look at her. Her face is grimy from ash and sweat, and her black hair is streaked with more dirt. She looks just how she sounds. Tired. Broken. The circles under her eyes are deep, like bruised fruit. Tangling my fingers in her hair, I draw her close. I kiss each eye, as gently as I'm able. Then, her lips. Compared to our first kiss, this one is gentler, but no less deep. Mouths, and softness, and the liquid heat of the steam. Our hands holding each other's faces in tight, as though we'd be lost without the press of the other's mouth to ours. There are words in our kiss. I feel them between our lips, unspoken, but just as clear as if we had been talking.
Or perhaps more clear because we're not.
There's no hesitation or misunderstanding to block or diminish their meaning. Just the simplest, most instinctive language of forgiveness. Forgiveness and hope. One of my hands moves down Ren's back, skimming her shoulder blades to nestle in the low curve of her spine as our bodies arc together under the water. Footsteps. Entering the courtyard. In an instant we untangle. Ren jumps out of the tub. She slings on a bathrobe as a figure comes into view through the swirling mist.
Blue smirks at the sight of us.
Me, breathless and flushed, water shifting around me. Ren, dripping water onto the wooden boards, the sash around her robe hastily tied. My lips feel swollen from the press of Ren's, and I resist the urge to cover them with my hands.
This is intimate, Blue purrs.
I was just leaving, Ren says smoothly, pushing her hair back over her shoulders.
Blue arches a brow.
Already? You haven't even washed your hair.
I glance at Ren, my breath hitching. Her hair is still matted with ash, and knotted now from my fingers. Giving Blue a cool, I don't know what you're talking about stare, Ren strides out of the courtyard, every bit as composed as usual. But I can tell by the way Blue's smile widens that she has noted my alarm. And while she may not know what just happened, she can certainly make a few guesses. 26.
4 days pass. 4 days of waiting, holed up in the maze-like corridors of Paper House, speculating with the girls on the assassins and what must be happening outside the palace until there's nothing new to discuss. Then, at lunch on the 5th day, Madame Himura tells us that the court has finally finished its interrogation of the attackers. Just as Chenna predicted, there will be an execution. The room goes quiet at the announcement. Jen and Jin swap dark looks, and Chenna quickly lifts one hand, forming the same prayer motion across her brow that I saw her make at the Koyo party. Next to me, Aoki lets out a long exhale.
Serves them right, Blue says loudly. Let the king show everyone what happens to those who oppose him.
Mariko nods, though she stays mute, picking at her nails, fingers spread on the tabletop.
The execution will take place at sundown tonight, Madame Himura croaks. Attendance is mandatory. You will return to your usual schedule the next day.
I meet Ren's warm-centered brown eyes across the table. I want to hear what she thinks, steal a moment of comfort from her words and her closeness. But Madame Himura sends us straight back to our rooms to begin yet another long sequence of preparations. Usually, Lil has some freedom in what she dresses me in, provided she follows certain customs and expectations. But as she unfolds the robes I'm to wear to the execution, she tells me they were selected specifically by Madame Himura.
She was very strict about it, Lil says, for all the mistresses.
She doesn't have to explain why she's telling me this. As soon as I see the robes, I understand.
It's too cruel, I say, almost whispering.
Lil avoids my eyes.
These are the king's orders, mistress.
We don't speak as she dresses me in the plain black robes. Black, not white. The very opposite, the very absence of our kingdom's mourning color. It's clear what the king's message is. White is a color to be respected and to be used for those we respect.
Criminals don't fall into that category. Instead, we dress in black to demonstrate our indifference to the assassin's suffering. The thought that they'll die looking out to this, a sea of night, doesn't seem fair. Before leaving, I take an ivory ribbon from Lil's box of silks and tie it round my wrist, making sure it's hidden beneath my sleeve. Our procession is somber as we make our way through the outer courts. There's a heaviness about the palace this afternoon. Even the sky and trees seem gray, as though the smoldering air from the attack on the theater has settled over the whole of the palace, a veil of smoke. The streets are packed, but the only sounds are the dull treading of foot and hoofsteps, and the rustle of fabric, the metal chime of spirit-warding talismans, snatches of whispered conversations that the wind whips away. When we get to the ceremony court, my eyes widen at the sea of people filling the vast square. Everyone who lives at the palace must be here. There are thousands of humans and demons of all three castes. At the center of the court are a stage and a separate viewing platform for court members, headed by the king's golden throne. The oryx carry us past the crowds, everything a whir of swirling ink-black robes. As soon as we arrive at the viewing platform, I go to Ren, pushing past jostling court officials craning for a better view. She clasps my hand, low, so no one can see. Though she lets go a second later, she stays close. "Are you all right?" she asks. I nod stiffly. "But I hate having to be here." "Me too." She takes something out of the fold of her robes just long enough to show it to me. A white flower. A tiny valley lily. Then she tucks it away. "It felt wrong," she explains. "Coming here without something to pay my respects, especially considering what happened in the tunnel." The sight of the flower sends a warm rush through my chest. Carefully, I draw back my sleeve to reveal the ribbon at my wrist, and Ren's face softens. She gives my fingers another squeeze. It takes half an hour for the entirety of the palace to arrive, the king turning up last in an extravagant palanquin carried by 8 oryx demons. I don't have a clear view of him through the thick crush of bodies as he settles on the throne, but even at this distance, the sight of his curved horns makes the hairs on my arms lift. Somehow, I can tell he's smiling. Soon after, the carriages with the assassins arrive to the thunder of drumbeats. Each is pulled by a pair of muscled black horses and marked with silks of deep obsidian. They stop before the stage, the horses stamping, clouds of steam blowing from their nostrils. An expectant hush ripples through the crowd. First, the executioners step out. The assassins follow, stumbling from the carriages, gold circles shackled to their necks like dog collars. The skin at my wrists tingles. Their chains look similar to the ones the shaman put around my ankles and wrists when I was in isolation. All around us, the court erupts in a roar. The drummers beat harder, stirring the frenzy. I don't know whether the crowd is pretending to be excited for the king's benefit. Unlike at the Koyo party, there is a mix of castes and positions here. But my stomach lurches anyway. The whole thing is like a performance, with the crowd willing participants. I thread my fingers through Ren's. No one's paying attention to us. Their focus all on the stage, and I need her right now. Need the familiar warmth of her hands to ground me, to calm my already frantic heart from spiraling so far out of control that it breaks free, and me with it. I want to scream, thrash, run at the king and tear that cruel smile off his face. Blank, beige-colored masks
have been strapped over the assassins' faces, curving creepily over their foreheads and noses to leave only the small lines of their mouths underneath. Another trick of this awful performance: hide the faces of the people you're about to kill so they don't seem human. Then I think of the slaves at the Koyo party. The woman on the bridge the night of the unveiling ceremony, her head caved in by a demon guard. Maybe it wouldn't make a difference, even if the masks were off. It seems that to most demons, being paper cast already makes you less than human. The executioners are three moon-cast demons. There is a gray-coated wolf man, a hulking crocodile demon with leathery, russet-scaled skin, and the white fox female who escorted me to the king's room that night. They must be the king's personal guards. Dull light glints off their long, armored overcoats as they lead the assassins onto the stage. While the other two drop to their knees to face the king in silence, the assassin being led by the wolf struggles against his bindings. He's shouting, lurching toward the throne. Even from here I can see the slash of red around the man's throat from where the golden collar digs in. It must be agony, but he keeps rearing forward, screaming words I can't make out over the braying crowd as the king regards him coolly. The wolf soldier jerks the chain back. He slams his foot down on the man's back, forcing him to the floor, before dragging him onto the stage. I get a view of the wolf demon's face for the first time as he turns, and my breath hitches. It's Ren's wolf. That's why he seemed familiar. The unveiling ceremony. He stood at the king's side along with the fox and the crocodile demon. I turn to Ren. That's him, isn't it? The wolf you were with that night. When she hesitates, I say, please, no more lies. Her lips part. Then she answers stiffly. His name is Kenzo Ru, Major Ru, one of the king's personal guards. He oversees all the royal armies and advises the king on military tactics. And the other two? The crocodile is General Ndezi. The white fox is General Naja. She's the highest-ranking female in the kingdom. My brow furrows. What about the demon queen? Until she gives the king a male heir, Ren replies, she's pretty much insignificant. A thread of pity runs under her words. You don't think she will? I'm not sure she can. There are rumors about the king's ability. She shoots me a sideways look. No one would dare speak it here, but apparently some of the clans have given him a nickname, the Empty King. It takes me a moment to understand his fertility, or rather lack of it. A hazy memory returns of that first lunch in Mistress Yara's suites, when Chenna asked whether the demon queen had produced any children for the king. Blue and Mariko had looked aghast. They must have heard the rumors before they arrived at the palace, and couldn't believe Chenna would approach the subject so boldly. Suddenly, the king's anger makes even more sense. Not just anger, desperation. Because what is a king without an heir? A warm, feather-light feeling rises in my belly. Because what could Ikara be without a demon king? Just then, the crowd falls silent as the king rises to his feet. He marches forward, his gold-plated hoof all punctuating the tense hush, a more controlled swagger in his gait than the last time I saw him. His gaze roams slowly over the crowd. I catch a glimpse of his arctic blue eyes, an ugly smile on his handsome face. My loyal subjects, my fellow demons and humans. Magically amplified, his voice booms out, echoing off the walls.
It brings me no joy to stand before